Hello, I'm Joyce Napier. Don Martin is off today. Welcome to Power Play from Monday, April 2nd, on a day when we learn from the Israeli Prime Minister and not from the Canadian government that a number of African refugees from Israel will be coming to Canada. But not so fast. The deal is now on hold, only hours after it was announced. We'll have the representative from the UN High Commission for Refugees explain what will now happen to the thousands of refugees and how many may eventually arrive on Canadian soil. Coming up as well, Donald Trump just can't stop tweeting. He's now threatening to scrap NAFTA if the Mexicans don't help build the southern border wall. Yes, the wall he's been promising in order to keep what he calls loads of migrants from crossing into the United States. And our strats today will weigh in on the environment minister's latest comment about how she has no time for those who disagree with her policies, and also the Liberals' controversial summer jobs program, and how the government seems to have problems passing legislation. Our favorite pollster, Nick Nanos, will explain how Canadians, that would be us, feel about trade war, pharmacare, and our federal political parties. But first, the threat of trade wars. U.S. President Donald Trump once again threatening to tear up NAFTA. Today's reason, he wants Mexico to do a better job of securing the border. And of course, Trump still wants the wall. The fears rippling through the markets today. The Dow closed down 458 points and the TSX was down 153 points. Now, a lot of things contributed to the volatile market, but fears of a bigger trade war between the U.S. and China certainly helped. Let's bring in our guests, Chris Sands, director of the U.S.-Canada Institute at the Johns Hopkins University, and international trade lawyer and expert Lawrence Herman. But before we get into it, I want to read this tweet by Donald Trump. Mexico is doing very little, if nothing, at stopping people from flowing into Mexico through their southern border and then into the U.S. They laugh at our dumb immigration laws. They must stop the big drug and people flows, or I will stop their cash cow, NAFTA, need wall. End of quote. So let me start with you, Chris Sands, explainer of all things American. Is this another idle threat?
Well, it's not idle, although it may come from his id. I think the president has, for a long time, really focused on the wall. Sometimes he'll say, well, it could be a fence, it could be some sort of security barrier. But he keeps coming back to this issue. And no matter how many times he's told that it isn't practical or that it won't work, he reverts to this, especially on Monday morning when he's gearing up for a new week. I think that he wants some action. And remember, Congress wouldn't fund it as part of their big budget bill, even though the president ultimately signed it. He tried to get the Secretary of Defense to allocate some money from the defense budget to pay for the wall. That didn't seem to go very well. Secretary Mattis sent him away. So now he's going back to his old theme of getting the Mexicans to pay for it. It's a bit of a broken record, but I think it comes from someplace very deep in his list of commitments. He wants a wall on the southern border, no matter what anybody says about its practicality or its necessity.
Well, Lawrence Herman, obviously, talk of the wall is a great crowd pleaser in the United States, I guess. Could this issue between the U.S. and Mexico derail NAFTA talks?
Oh, it certainly could. This is an important factor in the NAFTA negotiations. And, you know, those negotiations under any circumstances, leaving aside this business of the wall, would be a complex undertaking. And the wall issue just makes it all the more difficult to settle an agreement among the three countries. But the broader issue is this. We're seeing the unraveling of the established order of things, and that affects international trade, and it affects international business, and it affects the stock markets. And that's what we saw happening today, not totally attributable to a tweet, but a lot of the uncertainty in the markets is a reflection of the concerns over the looming trade war that is being unleashed by a chaotic and frankly, an undisciplined White House.
But Chris, is the war between the U.S. and China going to impact NAFTA? Because there are a lot of things impacting now those talks.
Well, I think it's interesting. Remember that the Germans tried to fight a two-front war in World War II, and it did not work very well for them. I think it'd be very hard for the U.S. to simultaneously have a disagreement with its North American neighbors and big trading partners, as well as a trade war with China. And part of the reason for that is what Donald Trump and Robert Lighthizer talk about as leakage. So imagining you do put some sort of tariff or barrier on the Chinese, what if some of their products are shipped through third countries and actually enter the U.S. economy through Canada or even Mexico? Already, Ottawa and Mexico City have been trying to reassure the administration that it will not participate in any attempt to end run imports or barriers that the Trump administration puts up. But I think the issues are inevitably intertwined. Our supply chains, our value chains crisscross in and out of countries in such a way that I think Donald Trump has a very old-fashioned vision of trade. It's going to be very hard for him to get what he wants with China without dragging Canada and Mexico in. So I think it complicates talks on all fronts.
You know, and yet it's got to be frustrating for Canadian and Mexican negotiators, and maybe even for the American ones, because last week, Robert Lighthizer, the front man on trade in the U.S., was expressing optimism, even said an agreement may be possible by May. Now, Mr. Lawrence, is this still possible?
I think it's unlikely that the negotiations can conclude this month. There's a lot of pressure, and no doubt a lot of pressure because of the various political agendas, particularly the Mexican election, but also the U.S. midterm elections. There's a lot of pressure on the negotiators, but there are many, many highly difficult, complex issues to resolve. They're working away now as we speak and trying to settle some of these complexities. But I'm a skeptic when it comes to thinking that a deal could be done by the end of April. That will simply perpetuate, if it's not done, that will just perpetuate the uncertainty that the markets are reacting to. And Chris Sands is absolutely right. The markets are very intertwined. We're not talking about a trading environment of 40, 50 years ago. We're talking about today's world where supply chains are highly integrated, and where one threat of tariff escalation by the United States results in a response by China, and those two factors alone upset the international trading regime enormously. And that's what we're seeing today in the reaction of the markets.
Well, quickly, I want to hear you both before we go. You know, although Canada does now have a reprieve, the threat of tariffs on aluminum and steel still looms, though, right? It was sort of the carrot and the stick, Donald Trump saying, you know, if you're nice about NAFTA and if you get the deal done, there won't be these tariffs. If not, there will be these tariffs. So how does this sit now in this really important next round in Washington? Let me start with you, Chris, briefly, and then...
Sure. I think it's very difficult. We still don't know if the round in Washington will start this week or whether it'll start later. We've left that up in the air. And the uncertainty hanging over business is going to eventually discourage investment. It's going to lead people to sit on their money and not move forward with their business plans. Donald Trump's done very well with a relatively good economy since he's taken office. That's carried him in polls to a point to his highest approval ratings so far. But that's unsustainable if the economy is blown up over his trade obsessions. And the fact that this is creating uncertainty. There's some of the rumors in Washington revolved around last week. The president needed to get an extension of his trade promotion authority for 3 years. There was some talk Congress might try to have a vote on that by objecting to a sort of unanimous consent for the extension and attach conditions like no more NAFTA withdrawal. So I worry that the optimism you mentioned from Robert Lighthizer was all to reassure Congress, don't do anything, stay calm, give us our extension, which they have now done. So now we're going to see a return from carrots back to sticks, from optimism back to pessimism.
Well, that's all the time we have with you. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for being here, for enlightening us, or as much as we can, and who knows what tomorrow will bring and what tweet Donald Trump will send out in the early morning. Thanks for being there. Power Play always welcomes your views on this or other topics. Please reach out through social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also contact us via email. Our address is powerplay@ctvnews.ca. Still to come on Power Play, hours after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Canada will be among the countries taking in African migrants from Israel, he walks it back. We'll take a look at what this dramatic about-face and what it means for the thousands of refugees in limbo. Stay with us. This morning, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu came out and announced Israel had reached a deal to resettle thousands of African refugees in Western countries, including Canada. But late today, he suspended the plan. This is what he said this morning.
It's a good agreement. I'm very glad that we achieved it with the UN Commissioner on Refugees. It enables us to solve this problem in a way that serves, protects the interests of the state of Israel and gives a solution to the residents of southern Tel Aviv and other neighborhoods, and also for the people who came in into Israel. I think it's a good solution, a proper solution. Thank you.
To explain this refugee agreement and why it's on hold, Jean-Nicolas Beuze joins me in studio. He is the United Nations High Commission for Refugees representative in Canada. Now, welcome to you, Jean-Nicolas. Let's go back to Israel. Who are these refugees?
So there are some 40,000, mainly Eritrean and Sudanese, but also other nationalities, who entered irregularly into Israel to seek asylum. They have not been yet processed for their asylum claim. And the deal that we were trying to pass with the government was to resettle a number of those outside Israel, including in Canada, in exchange of having the status of others being regularized in Israel and them being able to settled in Israel.
So the Israeli ambassador says that Canada approached Israel and said, we will help you out, we will take in some of these refugees. Some of these are sponsored, that's 1,800. Will there be more than that when and if Mr. Netanyahu changes his mind again?
There has been an ongoing program to resettle through private sponsorship some people out of Israel, some refugees out of Israel, Eritrean and Sudanese in particular. There's a long tradition here in Canada to have private sponsor helping refugees to come to Canada and settle here. So we hope that this will continue and that the number may eventually increase in the short term.
So, but Canada promises also in 2018 to take 4,000 more refugees. Would this be part of the same program?
They have promised to take 10,000 refugees altogether, but 4,000, I understand, Eritrean from different parts of the world, because Eritrean have been seeking asylum not only in Israel, but in other countries. And so there is a commitment on the part of Canada to help resettle the number of those Eritrean to Canada.
I know this is a hypothetical question, but why would, after the countries such as Canada have accepted to take on these refugees from Israel, would the Prime Minister of Israel have put this on hold? Do you have any idea why he would be doing this at this point?
The commitment of Canada to resettle through private sponsorship Eritrean and Sudanese out of Israel is separate from the deal which was being negotiated by the UN Refugee Agency and the Israeli government. So those are two distinct negotiations. What stays is the fact that a number of Eritrean refugees will be resettled through private sponsorship, through the generous support of private Canadian citizens to Canada.
This, despite what Prime Minister Netanyahu did today, which is suspend this program.
Correct.
So they will be coming to Canada. We don't know when.
We don't know when. Some have already arrived because there's already a community of Eritrean and Sudanese here, resettled refugees and others, who are sponsoring, for example, family members, but people from their community out of different countries, including Israel.
Thank you so much, Jean-Nicolas Beuze, for this. Thank you so much.
Merci.
The immigration minister was not available for comment today, but released the following statement. We have been in direct contact with the government of Israel, and we have reached an arrangement with Israeli authorities to suspend the deportation and detention of individuals who have private sponsorship applications for Canada. We are also in the process of meeting our previously announced government-assisted refugee commitment of resettling 4,000 Eritrean refugees by the end of 2018. So I'm joined now by immigration refugee lawyer Rona Lee Carey. Thank you so much for being here. Difficult to understand exactly what is going on, except that Canada has accepted to take on these refugees that have come from Africa into Israel. Do you get the feeling that they're getting to the front of the line?
Well, this will be the question. There are currently thousands of individuals who are waiting to be sponsored to come to Canada. How quickly they can arrive in Canada depends on how quickly the applications are processed. So if these applications get processed more quickly, will that mean that other refugees won't come here as quickly? Other countries will get left behind. This is the question that we ask as refugee lawyers. If someone gets special treatment, who is it going to hurt? In Israel, currently, they're safe. They're not in a war situation. So if the Israeli government would simply allow them to stay while the processing continues along the regular stream, then we could accept people who are in more urgent situations.
But how can they be in urgent situations if they are in Israel where their lives are not threatened, though?
If they return to their country of origin, they would be threatened.